five people, they could be dead or alive, whoever, that has had the most impact on your life.
No one's ever asked me this question before, and I am literally on a different show every day, so this is so funny. So great question. First, of course, for sure, my son, he's the most important person in my life, and he's...
What's his name?
My son's name is Dylan.
Hey, Dylan, and, how are you?
Right, there's pictures of him in the back.
Thanks for tuning in to our podcast, Leaders, Followers, and everything in between. We love having you here. It is our mission to bring you all of the latest and greatest tips and skills and know-how and how to make your personal life and business life the very best it can be. We know that you have it in you. We believe in you. We just want to show you how.
Today, we have the amazing privilege to have Heather with us, and she is a best-selling author, and she has written two books that have been very impactful. One of them that has impacted me is the Confidence Creator. And so, Heather, so I want to ask, like, have you always been this confident in who you are as a person, as an individual?
No, definitely not. I was in corporate America for 20 years, and during that time, I really had not stepped into my power, was not my most confident self. I felt instead that I had to behave a certain way or look a certain way because of the people that were around me and the direction that they would give me and the negative feedback I would get when I was more myself. So in fact, I was a much more insecure version of myself. However, on the outside, I was a chief revenue officer. I made a lot of money. I held prestigious positions in different events and whatnot. So people would perceive me as being very confident, but I really was the antithesis. Today, I'm a lot more confident than I was then.
Wow. So would you say that a lot of your energy was coming from the outside, but it really wasn't reflected on the inside? Would you say that's a good characterization?
No. So energy to me, for me, I have like massive energy, and I always have. Even when I wasn't a very secure version of myself, I still have a very powerful, strong energy. It's just innate within me.
Okay.
That's always been inside me. And when I was in corporate America and I wasn't real confident, I still really emitted this strong energy everywhere. I've been told that whenever I meet someone, it's the first thing they say to me, your energy is amazing. And it's always been like that. So I see energy as separate, different from confidence. You know, energy is what you emit. It's almost like a frequency, as John Assaraf explained to me from the movie The Secret. You know, it's like a frequency that we emit, a level that we're at on a subconscious, not, you know, directive manner.
Yeah.
It's really who we are and just that frequency we're running at. So that, for me, I don't know why, but for me, I've always been blessed with a really strong, powerful, good energy,
even
if I'm not very confident. So even just the other day, I was in Boca Raton. I did my TEDx talk in Boca Raton.
How was that, by the way? How was that?
You don't know because you don't get to see it. So it's not out yet. And I have a sense of how I believe it's good, but I don't know. I'll tell you when you see it, we'll see it at the same time. You know,
that is so powerful. That's like one of those bucket list items, right? Like, you know, to do a TEDx, that's bucket list, right?
You know? But I'll tell you, it's really, I speak all over and I've been a speaker for a long time, but having to stand in a little red dot, having to adhere to someone's directive. You can't do this. You have to do this. You get 10 minutes only. The ticker's running. You can't leave this area. You can't jump off the stage. You're so confined.
Wow.
And I've never had a situation like this before. So it was a first for me. And the reason why I bring it up is to say my confidence really dipped right before I was going to go on stage. I started panicking and I could hear, it's a very strange scenario because there's so many speakers. There's a day of speakers. So you're one of many.
Okay.
I happen to be going first.
You first?
Well, I was happy with that. I was like, yeah, great. You know, excellent. I'm ready. I'll be great. It's going to be wonderful. However, they asked me to jump up on stage that morning of. And that morning, I had no hair and makeup on. I was like how I am right now. I was in my sweats. And I just jumped up on the stage thinking no big deal because it was just a rehearsal. No one's really watching. And they put a microphone on me and they said, Heather, just start giving your talk. And I did. And about 4 minutes into it, I just froze and everything left my mind. And that's never happened to me before. And
wow.
So I got really stressed out. And then someone came up to me and said, oh, I have a friend who did something similar. You know, it was like the most important moment of their life and they blew it. And when that person said that to me, in my head, I started getting super negative.
Oh my goodness.
And I said, you know what? I'm leaving right now. And I told the head of TEDx, I said, I've got to go. I need to go get ready and take a shower and like get in a different mind frame because this isn't helping me here. And I left and I went and got with, you know, my people and calmed down and like got positive reinforcement and recentered myself. And like, I have a playlist I listen to that helps trigger me to get really confident and remember that
I'm good at one of the Kanye songs, one of the playlists.
Yeah. Black skinhead is on my, that's my fire up. Yeah. So I'm like a thug life rapper my whole life. People think it's crazy, but I just always have loved rap. That's like my genre. That's what I listen to. And so that playlist is Drake, Kanye, Kendrick Lamar.
You got to tell me the specific songs.
And Meek Mill. So I'll tell you, I just added Biggie Small to it and I'm adding Lizzo too because I really like her lately. But so the songs that are on like my core playlist, that I've been doing this for 2 years. Since I got fired, I have this playlist that I use and it's been the same one. So wait, I'm going to pull it up just so I can read it to you. But this is what's so funny is everyone needs to do this. This is like mandatory. I don't care. You need to have a theme song. And the reason why is it really works, right? So if you get yourself in a situation like we all do where you're stressed out, not feeling your best, and you have this playlist that you run, it immediately takes you in your mind to a different place. Like, oh, hang on, the last time I've trained myself, every time I'm going into something big, I listen to this and I do great. Wow. Suddenly, it doesn't matter what's happening around me because inside my mind and my ears, I know I'm about to do great. So yes. I just let go of everything else. Okay, here we go. So Kendrick Lamar, I Love Myself. That's my theme song.
I love that one. That's a great one. I Love Myself. I love that one.
Yes, I love that one. Okay, then Nice For What, Drake. I love that song too. gotta hit them angles. Then Black Skinhead, Kanye West, which is like, that's my power freaking song. Like, I feel like I'm Kanye in that song. Wins and Losses, Meek Mill. I love that one. And then I have This Is Me, which this is a song from the movie The Greatest Showman. Oh, it's so beautiful. It could make me cry. It's all about like being your vulnerable self and owning yourself, flaws and all. And so that's what I use for like 2 years now. Every time I speak or go to something big, I was going on Steve Harvey's show in January and I'd never done a television show live that big. Wow. And I put my headphones on. I was in the car with a friend of mine and she was trying to talk to me. I'm like, don't talk to me anymore. And I just listened to the playlist over and over again because it's a way for me to stay centered and really tune into who I am and let myself know everything's going to be great.
Wow, that's great. That's great. And I think we all need that in different moments in our lives because I feel like the human psyche, we're so fragile, right? We're so fragile. And when we get thrown off, let's say we get thrown off or something, those songs, they basically become our true north. They anchor us. They get us right back. And I do a very similar thing. I like Eminem's Lose Yourself. You better lose yourself in the music. The moment you own it, you better. And when I'm about when I'm about to give a big speech, I remember first time I met Obama when he was president. That was a pretty big moment for me. You, whenever you are doing something that, let's say, for example, you've never done before, or you've imagined yourself doing it, but you're just like, you think you're prepared for it until it's like 5 minutes when the Secret Service comes and says, the President of the United States is going to come, you know, here's some protocol. I felt like that when I met the King of Spain, you know, that was pretty like, you know,
intimidating.
You're not supposed to touch them, but a lot of times, you know, when you're in that moment, you know, he reached out his hand and then his wife was the queen. She reached out and for some reason I just hugged her. And I was just like, you're not supposed to do that. That's like everything you're not supposed to do. But you know, she was very gracious and she kind of like gave me one of those obligatory hugs, you know? But it was funny. Like, you know, but whenever we're going into places like a job interview or we're going, I remember when I was in grade school, I used to have to walk by these kids and these kids were like the cool kids. And so I would have to like kind of psych myself up because some of them was on the left side, some of them was on the right side. And, you know, and they were sometimes not very nice. Sometimes they were like bullies, you know. But I would have to like carry myself with a certain level of confidence and constitution, because if they looked in my face and they saw a little bit of intimidation, a little bit fear, that could have been the end of me. You know, so you would have to, like, I would be like, you know, back then we had Walkmans. I don't know if you remember Walkmans. And I would have to, you know, pull up like that. So, wow. So you talked about Ted. So you mentioned about being fired. So how did that impact your confidence? And what did you do to actually overcome that scenario?
Yeah. So after 14 years and consistent advancement, I was promoted 3 times. I reached the C-suite. I was a chief revenue officer. I'd been there 14 years. And when the CEO I worked for became ill, he elevated his daughter to replace him. She had never liked me. And so pretty much immediately she called me over and said she no longer had a need for a chief revenue officer. Therefore, there was no need for me anymore. And, you know, I went home that day devastated, because I had attributed so much of my own personal value, personal worth to that title, my paycheck, and, you know, that role that I had played and that team that I had built. So there was a lot of emotion, you know, sadness, losing all those people I loved that worked for me, or, you know, this in my mind, this known space that I owned. And I had a non-compete, which meant that for 1 year, I couldn't go back to the media business to work for any company. So I went home knowing I can't go back to the industry I've been in for 20 years, that I have a great reputation in and that I could make a lot of money in. I have to start over new somewhere tomorrow. And I'm a single mother and I don't know, you know, I've built a lifestyle that's very expensive and I don't know how I'm going to afford that. So it was really quite devastating in that moment. But I did something really smart, and I decided to post and tell people, hey, I just got fired. And it is incredibly...
Wow, that's very gutsy.
That's what everyone said to me. But for me, it was one of those moments that you turn inwards and say, what am I telling myself that I need to do? And I just heard myself say, post. If no one can... I likened it to getting divorced. When I got divorced, no one knew I was divorced. No one's going to ask you on a date. So you had to let people know what's going on in your life if you want them to be able to extend an opportunity to you. Exactly. Or whatever. So in my mind, that's how I rationalized it. That post went viral. I had thousands of responses offering me connections, opportunity, and Froggy at the Elvis Duran Show tweeted at me, hey, I wanna help you, how can I help? And I said, get me on the Elvis Duran Show. So he did. And wow. That was really the catalyst for me writing my book, because during that interview, Elvis said, well, Heather, obviously you're writing a book about this. And I said, oh, obviously, but I wasn't. And so, you know, asking for help ended up being a domino effect that took me to where I am today.
Wow. And it's very apropos that you say that, because when you think about it, when you speak your truth and you speak your story and your narrative, nobody else can control it. And that's a part about creating your confidence. For example, when you got divorced, I'm sure that was a very emotionally traumatic time for you, but you owned the narrative. You didn't let your ex-husband control the narrative. You didn't let, you know, your naysayers or anybody. And I feel like in life, that is one of the key nuggets of, you know, when you control the narrative, something bad happens to you. You know, you it's almost like you take the power out of it. You know,
you take
the thing out of it. You know, whatever happened to you, whatever the tragedy or the loss in your life, when you speak it and you say, you know what? I recently spoke to Ben Ferenc, who's a Holocaust survivor, and he's like 99 years old. He's the only living prosecutor for the Nuremberg trials, and the guy he's sharp as a tack. He's still practicing law at 99.
Wow.
He is the one that prosecuted Hitler's right-hand guy, Himmler, I think his name was. He's the one that sentenced him to death. So this guy has like, yeah. So when he was like talking and he says about controlling the narrative, he said, one of the things I wanted the world to know at the trials was, yes, my family died, but I'm not a victim. Was I victimized? Yes, but I choose not to be a victim.
Exactly.
And I feel like that's a choice. We sometimes have a lot of things that happen to us that we have no control over. However, we can control, I'm not going to allow this to hurt me anymore, you know? know?
You're so right. You're absolutely right. That's so powerful that that man was able to see that opportunity and make that choice. It's really impressive.
Exactly. And I remember when I was in the third grade, I was a very rather rambunctious child, very energetic. This was in the ADD, ADHD. I think I was ADD, ABCDEFG. I mean, I was the whole alphabet, you know? And I remember there was a teacher who, my third grade teacher, who was just fed up with me. I mean, I have to admit, I was a bit of a handful. And she called me stupid in front of the whole class.
Yeah. Horrific. That is horrific.
And you know, the sad part about it is I believed her. And so it became a self-fulfilling prophecy in that sense.
Sure.
Someone that is an authority figure, someone that is supposed to be, you know, lifting you up, encouraging you, positive reinforcement. And I remember just a downward spiral. And but years later, when I had controlled that, I went back and I said, you know, it's like having like to use a computer term, it's like having like a virus in your computer.
Sure.
You sometimes have to go back and say, there was a traumatic event. I have to go back. Not so that we can live in the past, but many times we have to go back and say, I believe the limiting belief. I believe the lie. That's not, I mean, I'm not a stupid person. Here, I got a master's in finance, so I'm not a dumb person. But a lot of times in our lives, we allow either, it can be someone in our family, it can be a priest, it can be a teacher, it can be a doctor, someone of authority, it can be a sibling, it can be someone that's just hating on you, a hater. And so what advice would you give someone that something happened to them? It can be tragic, but they change that narrative. What advice would you give to someone like that?
Well, you know, you brought up a good example, which is, you know, when I first wrote my book, no one in my family or anywhere thought I'd be an author, right? So I decided to share it with my inner family, my innermost family, literally weeks before the book was going to come out. And when they all saw it, a couple of the people in my family said, absolutely not. You cannot publish this book. It's going to fail. You're going to get sued. No one's going to read it. You're in your time. Really? And it felt terrible. So I completely identify with what you're saying. But what I did that was really smart, which I really encourage other people to do, is I took a step back. I felt sad, which is normal. I questioned, should I not publish my book? Maybe I should just scrap this idea. Before I did anything further, I called someone that was light years ahead of me. And this is what I encourage people to do. Someone that's not familiar with my family has, and I was crying and I said, listen, bad news. I think we're going to scrap the project. And he said, why? And I told him, and he said, Heather, okay, let's walk through this. Who did you write the book for? I wrote a book for anyone struggling with their confidence. Okay, Heather, you know, and he started like asking all these qualifying questions, which had nothing to do with my family or their opinions. And at the end of the conversation, I knew, oh, I'm publishing this book. This has nothing to do with my family. And he said, you're reacting from an emotional level because of their thoughts, but that's about them. They have nothing to do with this. Let's get back to where you and I were just, you know, a couple hours ago, that this is going to be a great book. It's going to do amazing. And I've written and published 19. You can trust me. So it's important to get a hold of someone who's light years ahead of where you are, because they're going to be able to see your fears and they're going to be able to help you calm them and realize what actually is possible and the potential within you.
And you know, and you and I both, we love personal development, personal training and everything like this. And one of my mentors, I was actually just speaking to him earlier today, Les Brown. I don't know if you ever heard of the legendary Les Brown.
Sure.
Well, he's a good pal. And he always says to me, you have to be the product of the product, you know? And when I pride myself in being able to read people very well. And what I read from you is, you strike me as someone that is very confident and very assured of yourself. But of course, you're a beautiful woman, very intelligent. But you also come across to me as someone that's very humble and relatable. So, like, like, how do you balance those two things? Yes, I'm confident. I'm an empowered woman. But at the same time, you maintain this level of relatability, this level of, humility. How do you balance confidence? Because when it almost seems like it's the opposite, but you seem to blend them almost like a symphony. How do you do that?
So what I look to when I hear that, well, thank you, first of all, for your nice compliments. I appreciate that. But what I look to is, back in corporate America, there was this woman that I knew who acted like everything was perfect. Every day her life is perfect. Everything is always perfect. She is perfect. And I used to believe that. Oh gosh, that's really intimidating. I'm not perfect at all. What I've learned now that I'm out of that environment, she's the most insecure person that I know, right? Now that I can get space and seat. So the more confident I became, the more I stepped into who I really am, and the more I got away from negative people that were trying to hold me down and try to force me to be small, I realized the more I show up as the real me, the me that has, you know, nerves before I get on the TEDx stage, or, you know, was nervous where I was on Steve Harvey, or whatever the challenge is, the more I share that, who is who I really am, the more people will be able to relate to me, connect to me. And then, you know, it's not putting off to say, I want my TED Talk to have 50 million views. Well, now people cheer for me because they want me to as well, because they also know that I don't just want to have 50 million views because I want to say I'm great. I want to have 50 million views because then I can impact 50 million more people with a message that no one is perfect. And you know what? This is what confidence looks like. I'm going to fall down. I'm going to get right back up.
Yes.
And you know what? And I'm going to be right here cheering for you as you go through the same thing, because this is what real is. That other stuff, that other lady, that's not real. And I want that message to get out there, because for so long, I believed that was real confidence and something was really wrong with me. And it's sort of like what you explained with that teacher. You know, there are innately bad people in the world. It is what it is, right? It's about them. It's not about us. However, we've got to find and have a broader, louder voice to allow people to know, don't turn a blind eye to that crap, and instead focus on you, move forward with you. We're here with you and we're cheering you on, because that's how we're going to change the world.
That is true. And I love that, change the world. And I start my world tour in March 2020. So that's going to be fun. That's gonna
amazing.
I'll be in Auckland, New Zealand. I'll be in Sydney. I'll be in London. And I've traveled to about 50 countries around the world. And so I have friends literally everywhere. I could literally stay, whether it's in someone's, couch or whatever. I have friends literally everywhere. It's fun. But I'll be doing a lot of things having to do with a couple of things that I'm going to be advocating for is, climate change. I'm, trying to help with certain initiatives to save the environment, extreme poverty. I believe that, poverty is something we're always going to have with us, but extreme poverty, like, for example, every day, close to 33,000 kids die of hunger-related issues. I feel like in 2020, 2019, we have so many resources in the developed world. That shouldn't be going on. I mean, we can't make, buy everybody, Mercedes Benzes, but there's certain basic things, 200 million girls, not allowed to go to school just because they were born a female. Are you kidding me? 200 million, those sorts of things. I'll be meeting with certain heads of state and different things, and looking at different programs, collaborating with different charities. So I'm really looking forward to that. And when you are a confident person, I feel like you become the best version of yourself.
Sure.
To impact the world. So I'm just a little bit curious. If you could pick one book that has impacted you the most, just one. You can't pick two, just one. What book is it, and why?
I had to look on my dining room table right now. I have books everywhere. And it's what's funny is I was not an avid reader growing up. I was the social one. My sister was the smart one. I was one always trying to get out of reading and doing homework. I wanted to go play on teams and be with people. But since I launched my podcast, I've had to read so many books to interview people and, familiarize myself with their work. So I have a bunch of books out on my table right now because I'm reading so many, but I still go back to a really old one, which is The Obstacle is the Way, Ryan Holiday. Did you ever read that one?
I've never read that one. Wow.
it's really, really good. And it's all about these stories from the beginning of time of how when there is a challenge that's present, that's actually going through the challenge, moving through it is the answer. You're not going to find the answer going the other way and trying to escape that challenge. And it's really powerful. When I, you know, first got fired, I definitely leaned on that book to go back to, okay, remind yourself, because it's when you're emotional, it's so hard to break free to realize, okay, this is temporary, this is going to pass, things are going to change. You're just so down and in that moment, and books like that have really helped me.
And you come across as very very business savvy and entrepreneurial. Where did you learn that? Was it something that you learned in your family, or is it something that you just kind of picked up along the way?
No, I mean, in corporate America, I was running companies for 20 years. When I was 23 years old, I ran a group of radio stations valued at $25 million. And in under 3 years, I turned it into a property worth $55 million and sold that company. So I've been hustling and working and making massive revenue increases since my early 20s.
Wow. Wow. And they always say, like, whenever you are, let's say you're working for Pfizer or you're working for GE or a big corporation, sometimes it's so easy when you're selling your products for another firm or another entity. But when you are a self proprietor or you're in business for yourself, it's so hard. And it goes back to confidence, because you can sell a $55 million business for another company. But when it comes to, let's say, selling one of your courses or selling one of your coaching things, why is it so hard to do that when you've done so much for other people and other entities? Why do you think that's so hard?
All right. I don't find that to be the case. For me, it's much easier selling me than it was selling for a company, because I know I will never let people down. I'm ride or die team me. You know, I believe 100%. So I'm not... When you believe in something wholeheartedly, it's the easiest thing in the world to sell. So if someone were to ask me, Heather, I'm having a hard time selling myself and my services, I would say you're doubting yourself, first of all, right? So that's number one. So you're not feeling confident in something that you're offering. So a couple of things. One, we could either look at, what is the product and service that you're selling? Is there a way to improve that so you feel more confident? Two, you might just be doubting yourself because you're just feeling insecure. So let's look at your reviews and recommendations. That's a way that always gets me excited. Yes, is yes. No one's going to sell your product better than another happy customer, right? So let's look at those reviews. And when you start reading the impact that you can have and your product and service can have and the problem that your product and service sells or overcomes for someone else, that's really empowering. And then lower expectations on yourself. Anytime I'm going to speak, I always say, if I can reach one person today, I have done my job. So just take it down a moment, you know, like, let's get back to basics here. And if you can help improve someone's life by selling this product to them, why wouldn't you offer it to them, right? Because then, I mean, you're helping them. And at the end of the day, if we're helping other people and we mean good and we're bringing good forward, that's something, that's our job to make that happen.
Exactly, exactly. And people that have had an impact on you, this one, five people that have had an impact. It could be like your son, it could be like your mom, it could be like, you know, Mother Teresa. Five people that you look at and say, you know what, these people, it almost is like they came into my life at the right time and they spoke something, or it could have been like a boss or a manager, whatever. Five people, they could be dead or alive, whoever, that has had the most impact on your life.
No one's ever asked me this question before, and I'm literally on a different show every day. So this is so funny. So great question. First, of course, for sure, my son, he's the most important person in my life. And he's...
What's his name?
My son's name is Dylan.
Hey, Dylan. And, how are you doing?
Right, there's pictures of him in the back. So when he just a quick story on him. When I was writing the book and I was really doubting myself, I mocked up a fake book and just put my name, like an autograph on it, you know, as to say, this is my book. I don't know what it's going to be called. I don't know what it'll look like, but this is Heather Monahan's book, you know, to make it more real. And one day my son saw me sitting at the, you know, living room table writing every single day and et cetera, et cetera. So one day I get a box in from Amazon, which every day I order something from Amazon. But on this day, there was a book inside, and it was Sheryl Sandberg's book, Plan B or Option B. And so my son says, he sees me open the box and he says, Mom, why do you have this book? And I said, oh, honey, Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, wrote it. And I just, you know, thought it would be interesting. He picked it. He goes, you don't need a plan B. You're plan A. And he pointed at the little mocked up book I had. He goes, that's going to work. We got to throw this out. And I threw that book out, which I know is terrible, but I want to explain why. I want to explain why I did. I wanted to validate for him that I saw he was cheering me on and encouraging me. Wow. And I wanted to show him that not only do I respect what he says, but I believe what he says. Wow. And so I threw that book right in the trash. And I said, I understand what you're saying to me. And I really appreciate that because I do need that encouragement. So anyhow, so he's been my number one ride or die since the beginning.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So that was
so wise. Oh my goodness. And how old is he?
He's 12. Now he's 12. When that happened, he was probably 9 or 10. Yeah, so it was a couple years ago.
It's like out of the mouth of babes, right?
It was crazy. But you know, it was so good. Yeah, okay, so all right, that was the one that first came to mind. I would probably say Oprah Winfrey because in my life, I'm 45, growing up, she was really the most powerful woman figure that I would ever... There weren't like a lot of strong women, you know, in media. I don't remember if there were. That's who comes to mind of like, she was making it. I would say today, like Ellen DeGeneres is another one to me that is like, she's powerful, funny, real. Like she embodies a lot of what I want to be and I aspire to. And what I also like about Ellen, similar to Oprah, Oprah's been fired too, but Ellen was literally kicked off television because she came out as being gay, different than everyone else, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then she, for a couple of years, couldn't get work and then rebooted and came back as she is today, which is like, she just never gave up, never quit, stayed the course no matter what the difficulty. And to me, that is, I love inspiration and I love people that are shining their light, being their unique selves. And she really embodies that to me today of that realness. So wow. I would say I love her, so that's three, and I need to give you two more. I'm trying to think. You know what? My softball coach in high school, I was really very insecure in high school, and my softball coach believed in me so much and pushed me so much, which I definitely, for a long time in my life, I've needed people to push me because I would hold myself back and kind of shrink back a little.
Yeah.
So she was definitely someone at a young age that did that for me. And then I would say my business partner in my 20s, a man named Jeff Wilkes, who really took a major chance on me when I was 22, 23 years old and let me move to Michigan and run his company for him as his partner and made me a tremendous amount of money. He gave me a huge opportunity. He believed in me. And those acts of like believing in someone really instilled confidence and self-worth. So.
Wow. That's, whew. You know, Sir Isaac Newton once said, he said, if I've seen further than other men, or women, he said, it's because I've stood on the shoulder of giants.
Exactly.
And I feel like if we were to really, like you were so articulate in what you were talking about. You're talking about your son, talking about Ellen, talking about Oprah, talking about this gentleman that took a chance on you. And it almost feels like destiny was playing its part and playing its role. What do you feel about that? Because some people they don't like to talk about destiny or fate. But what's your opinion on like that? Like, do you believe that we have like we're walking in some sort of script that's scripted for us? What do you feel about that?
I believe that. I think that people can also completely blow it though, right? Because at any given point in time, you can decide, oh, the struggle's too hard. I'm just going to give up and just do mediocre. And I see people do that all the time. I believe everyone has that potential within them. Like you're looking back on my life and you're connecting the dots and seeing this is your destiny. I feel that every day now for the past 2 years when I wake up, I see now that I can look back and see all these things that were awful are leading me here and to more greatness. But everyone has that within them. So many people don't take that leap. You have to first be willing to take the leap. And Steve Harvey has this great talk that he gave where he talks about, you know, he was homeless. And this man really struggled, but he was willing to take that leap of faith in himself, in God, in the universe, whatever that looks like for you. Okay. I don't care what you call it. But he was willing to jump and risk falling and not having his wings open up. And for a while, they didn't. And you get knocked around. And that's when a lot of people quit. And eventually, they do open up. And that's where you know, find your calling. And I legitimately, that's my life. I can't articulate that any better, that getting fired was that moment to say, do I just go back and try to find another job in corporate America and get even smaller now because I've been kicked down? Or do I just leap and pray to God that these wings are going to open up? And I got knocked around a lot. And I still get knocked around, but yeah. You know what? They're opening, and I know like there's so much more amazing stuff to come at. I get so excited.
Wow, that's exciting. That's exciting. I'm interested to know when do you like, do you have like a morning routine that you do like me?
Okay. I'll tell you, I know a lot of people believe my days are so crazy because this week I'm working at home all week. Next week I'm in LA. I'm doing my podcast all week and I'm batching a ton of different shows and I'll be from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting. Then the next week, I think if that's Thanksgiving weekend, I'm going back home and going to be with family and friends. And then the next, like everywhere, every week is so different. Every day is so different for me. You know, I practice gratitude. I want to work out. I want to eat healthy and I want to take care of myself and be with people I love doing things I love. Like that's all that really matters. And I'm drinking coffee while I'm doing it in the morning for sure.
Is it Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts?
That's so funny. So I grew up in Boston and I was a D&D girl, ride or die. And then I moved to Miami 15 years ago and there were no Dunkin' Donuts. So I switched and I became a Starbucks person. Isn't that awful?
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I'm a big believer in what Stephen Covey talks about, begin with the end in mind, you know?
Yes.
I have a very strong conviction that every single human being has a major contribution that they are supposed to make to planet Earth before they say goodbye to this form of being in this body. What do you want your major contribution to be to humanity?
You know, to me, if I could be remembered as a person that taught people that they can create confidence within themselves and how to do it, that would, without a freaking doubt, change our world. Because the people that bully, like you were bullied as a kid, like I was, the people that bully in corporate America, the bully children, they're all insecure. You know, so the haters out there, it's all about them having lack of confidence. If we could create a more confident world and confident individuals, this anger and animosity and accusing and undermining, it disappears. Because when you feel great about who you are, why don't you want to lift other people up? You do, of course. Like there's more than enough to go around and you just have this mindset of abundance. So if I could leave a legacy of that, oh my gosh, beyond my son, I just would be amazing.
Awesome. And last question. If you could interview anyone from history or present right now, who would you interview?
You give me these really hard questions. No one ever asks me hard questions like that. So funny.
It could be anybody. I mean, it could be like Napoleon. It can be Julius Caesar.
I know who it would be. MLK Jr. for sure. I mean, wow. Talk about changing our country, changing the world. And I'd love to hear like what he thinks of, you know, everything.
This is his son right here.
Oh my MLK gosh.
III.
And you've got an impressive wall there.
I remember having a conversation with him and he told me something. He said, everyone always talks about my dad, but he says it was my mom, because his dad traveled like all the time. And they were little tiny kids. And I remember him telling me, he said, my mom was fierce. I mean, she was like she was a lightning rod. And he tells me a story about, he said, because my parents was traveling so much, fighting for the cause of African-American civil rights, he said, we mostly stayed with our grandparents. And he said, a man came in to his father was a preacher as well as his father. And his grandmother played the organ in the church and his granddaddy preached. And one Sunday, a man came in while they were having their worship service and he shot the grandmother and killed her right in the middle of the service in front of everybody in cold blood. And of course he was arrested and he was, you know, a bigot. And this devastated him because for all intents and purposes, this was like his mom, you know? But anyways, he said that his grandfather takes him because he wants to confront the man in jail. And the man says to him, you know, you lucky if I get out, you know, I'll kill you too and kill your grandkids. I mean, this guy was just so full of hate. And he just remember his grandfather just seething with anger. And he just took him and his sisters and said, I'll pray for you, sir. And he did not get angry with this guy. He did not punch the guy out. He did not curse this guy out. This guy just killed his life partner, his wife, in cold blood. And as he's telling this story, I'm like, how come no one ever talks about it? And I'm just like,
right, right. How do we
like,
not know
holy
this?
Holy moly, you know? And whenever I speak with him, I always feel like he embodies his father's spirit. He's like a teddy bear. You just want to give him a big hug, you know? And so MLK, huh?
Well, I mean, I just think it'd be so interesting. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
it'd be so interesting.
Yeah. And you know the he's most famous for his I Have a Dream speech, right?
Sure.
You know that day he was not going to give that speech?
No.
Yeah, he was not going to give that speech. He was like a professor. I think he got his PhD by the time he was 24. And he was not going to give that specific speech. He was going to give another speech. And then all of a sudden, it was Mahalia Jackson, you know, the singer. She was in the front row and she had heard him speak like a few weeks before about this dream that he had. And this dream about like white kids playing with black kids and they were all like together and in harmony. And people were like literally falling asleep at the mall in Washington, D.C. And Mahalia just yells at him and says, Martin, tell him about your dream. Tell him about your dream. And the hairs on my head is just standing up. And he just abandons that speech and goes in, I have a dream. And he just goes into that. And it just rocked the whole country, rocked the whole world.
Do you know studies have been done on that speech? Because I was studying a lot of stuff about speeches for my TED Talk. And studies have been done on that speech saying it is the absolute perfect from how he goes from possibility to the challenge to the possibility, like this arc of his speech and the dynamic of it, it's like it's the absolute best template for anyone to use to emulate. So that's kind of interesting that was just done by chance. I mean, that's shocking.
Yeah. It's like catching lightning in a bottle.
Yes. Yes. You know? Exactly.
Well, Heather, it was, it was amazing having this this exchange with you. And please tell our audience where they can find your book and find out. I know you have some events coming up. Why don't you tell us where can we find everything about what you're doing?
Sure. My book, Confidence Creator, is on Amazon, and the Audible version I narrate. So definitely check it out if you like listening to audiobooks. It's really good.
I love listening to my car. So I have to download that today.
Oh my gosh. I'm so partial to audiobooks. It's so good. Yeah.
I'm definitely going to do it.
Thank you. And then my podcast is called Creating Confidence with Heather Monahan, and that's anywhere you would get your podcast. So please check that out. And then my website is heathermonahan.com. You can get my free accountability partner, my free ebook. I've got a lot of free offerings on my website that you can check out. And I'm on all social media at Heather Monahan.
Well, Heather, it's been a plum pleasing pleasure and a privilege to be in your presence today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. You're such a great guy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Let's stay in touch. And
yeah, for sure.
And I'll definitely, if I'm in town, I'll definitely come by and hear you in Boca.
Yeah, we got to meet up November 21st. I'd love to see you in person.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much.